actually reminds me of me trying to explain to grandma what weird flex but okay was.
Yeah.
One of the best afternoons of my life. Okay, yeah, grandma, somebody's like, I have 1,000 rubber ducks. And you're like, weird flex, but okay.
Was the end of the episode, but we got another episode coming right now
of the show that we're reviewing.
Of the show we're
our
reviewing.
Episode is 3 or 4 parts,
right?
Thanks for joining us, Upplotters.
Yeah. This is the episode Penultimate Patrol. It is the second to last episode, which is why it's called Penultimate, on season 1. Flashback again starts with a flashback.
Chicago, 1946.
This is Eric Morton's backstory, by the way. You see him come into the restaurant and you see Eric Norton come into a restaurant. He's got, like, he's carrying this, like, box of stuff, and he's meeting a woman, and this is his wife, Millie.
Oh yeah. And she's like, how did it go with the, she's reading a newspaper with a Brotherhood of Evil headline on it. And then she's like, how did it go with the Brotherhood of Evil? And I'm like, that's a little redundant. But funny. And he sits down and he's just like, it did not, essentially, like, in the most awkward way. He's like, not well. They fired me. And she's like, what?
How could they fire you?
And he's like, well, considering they're the Brotherhood of Evil, I'm glad I didn't die. They replaced me with a monkey, a gorilla.
And she's like, they replaced you with muscle?
No, like a literal gorilla. He speaks French.
Monsieur Milan, he eventually becomes the brain's lover.
Are you me?
Nice.
I mean, like, they were intimate, but I didn't know they got intimate.
It's a Sean fact. I don't know if it really how detailed they got in the show.
They
but...
never got more than, like, they were a little closer than a boss and a subordinate. But, like, but they're together all the time. They're obviously, like, but they're not obviously together.
Right. Ian pulls out some of these things, and she's like, you need, or he pulls out some of his inventions, one of which is a diagram of, like, it's like a red robot looking thing. And that comes up later in the episode.
Yeah.
So if you watch this, keep an eye on what it looks like, because you might see it again. And then his wife, Millie, comes up, and she's just like, no, you have to go back, and you have to go ahead and get your job back. And he's like, no, you don't understand. When the Brotherhood of Evil lets people go, they generally kill them, and they don't think that I'm a threat.
Either physically or intellectually.
Right.
Their words.
Yeah.
Poor guy.
And so his wife is like, you're right, you don't really have anything, and I'm the only one who believes you, and
I'm chased after you like a puppy, she
right.
says.
And then there's this they have this argument very publicly in the restaurant. People are looking at him, and as she leaves, and they get to the door, and he's like, I can be a somebody, and she's like, no, you're just a nobody.
He is dumped and fired on the same day.
Also in the scene, they pan out as she's leaving the restaurant, and there's a couple who's sitting in front of them. Did you see what the old guy did?
No.
He mouthed, oh, well. Saw that the second time I went through that, the second time I saw the episode. And every time after that argument, I look down at the old guy and he's just like, oh, well.
That's so cute. Okay. Well, you can see why he's crazy. Hey, let's cut to a school van that they painted gray. It's the Doom Patrol school bus.
Yeah. Road trip.
That's what I wrote. Road trip.
Yeah. And they have coordinates to find this guy who was looking. The guy who they're looking for is called the Beard Hunter. He eats a person's beard and then he can find them. It's gross. It's disgusting.
They make it overtly sexual.
Yeah.
And I don't know if we need that, but it's pretty funny.
Yeah. They make it overtly sexual, but they also like everything looks really gross when
he like licks it and like sniffs it, and it's like wet mouth stuff, and he gets it from like a drain.
Oh.
I mean, you guys, I would literally rather lick a toilet seat than eat anything that came out of the drain, because anything that would touch a toilet seat is something that would get stuck on the hair in a drain.
Ugh.
And it just sits there and gets slimy, and the proteins break down. And if you're not absolutely grossed out by the Beard Hunter, you've got it wrong.
I have relatively long hair, and it's also very curly. So when I brush it out in the shower, like, there's clumps that come out, and that's just normal for curly hair.
Well, and your hair is very long, so it's going to look like a lot more hair is coming out.
Right. It's relatively thin hair, so it's fine. It's fine hair.
Yeah.
But like every time I've had to like pull hair out of a drain, it's always sickened me. So whenever I pull it out, I always stick it to the shower wall, and then I just like clean it all up and throw it in the trash.
So then you don't have to pull it out of the drain.
Right.
Or buy some chemical that's going to melt it,
mm-hmm.
which is gross.
Yeah. It's just, I mean, that was our nice little tangent about the Beard Hunter and how he's gross. Anyways.
Yeah. Okay. So.
But they are looking for the Beard Hunter. And they come up, they're just like in this very rural area. They got a lot of trees and everything. And then they happen upon a random street.
What's the street doing here?
It's just a random street. But this is actually a teleporting, genderqueer, sentient street by the name of Danny.
Danny.
The best character on Doom Patrol.
The best.
Yeah.
Okay. So there's a couple characters I would 10 out of 10 hang out with, right?
Yeah.
20 out of 10.
Yeah.
I would find Danny.
Oh, yeah.
I would hang out with and
I would live on Danny if they were consenting.
Yeah. Yeah. But they seem to be consenting. They're like, if you want to find yourself, if you need a place to become who you are, come live on me.
They are part. They were actually introduced in the 80s before they had such terms as like genderqueer. And they would have like their shops and stuff on the street would be like gun shops and stuff. But it would be like all dressed in frills and girly things, because the only reference that they knew to kind of convey this was transvestitism or cross-dressing. And so
so they were trying to make it queer without like having the language.
Mm-hmm. And even back then, they were a favorite character for the comic book. Everybody loves Danny the Street.
Yeah.
It's a sentient pocket universe. Imagine a multiverse, but that is aware that it's like it knows that you're inside of it. They
right.
know that they're inside of it.
Right.
Sean has a couple of additional things.
I love
things
you, Danny. They don't make enough merch for me to buy it where I can wear it and have it on my body, but I want it.
Danny does most of their traveling at night when no one is looking, when they need to be transferred from one place to another. Danny's also portrayed as genderqueer using they, them pronouns. And their name is a pun on a drag queen, Danny LaRue. LaRue is a French name for the street. Danny LaRue, OBE. I think I found out that OBE is a British title for when you've done a lot for the state or the community. Was an Irish singer and entertainer best known for his onstage drag persona.
Lovely.
And
Danny has a rich, beautiful history.
He do. They do.
There you go. We all are awkward about it.
Yeah.
Here's the thing about being awkward about pronouns, by the way, people, just in case, as someone who has struggled, don't perseverate. If you f***ed up, just correct yourself. You can do a quick sorry. Like if you say Danny the Street, he, sorry, they, that's all you need. It shows that you weren't intentional and that you would like to continue the conversation more correctly. And that's all anybody I've known who has any kind of queerness who recognizes you doing that is like, I'm cool. Let's go on. You f***ed it up. Everyone has. But the cruel people have like come around to it and they're just like, and it's a different level of queer, like of it's not like people are being cruel, but people will come around to it, like they'll overcorrect. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
So they'll be like, and this is my experience, and I don't know from an actual trans experience, but from what I've seen, like somebody, it's much more irritating for somebody to be like, oh, you know me, I've just known forever, blah, blah, blah.
They give reason as to why they made the mistake.
Yeah, and I'm not interested in excuses. I mean, it exists, and if you'd like to have a conversation, but you're just stalling what we're trying to talk about by not just being like, oh, sorry, and then going on.
I've misgendered myself even as recent as this week.
Yeah.
Speaking as the cat, I think I was just saying something for pitch, but I said he for me.
Yeah.
So
I caught it, but you corrected. So yeah. We moved on in the conversation because first of all, we're talking for a cat and we're not being terribly serious.
Right. But it's a difficult thing to just.
Yeah. So if we fudge it up and we correct ourselves and move on, that's the correct model.
Right.
I think. Okay. So don't feel bad. Danny the Street wouldn't be mad at you.
Right.
Danny would still let you live on them.
Right. Like, in fact, Danny is so cool that the first time you meet them, a member of the Bureau of Normalcy is coming in to gather information. And when Danny can kind of see that this individual is maybe not as straight as they appear, Danny kind of entreats them. And like, even though this person was gonna come in and do come in and try and get Danny into the Bureau of Normalcy, Danny's just like, thank you for giving us a heads up on the fact that people are outside our borders and they want to come in and get us right now. We're gonna teleport right now. And just like that, that is how forgiving Danny would be.
And then that character,
Morally Corrupt, is a drag queen.
Morally Corrupt. Yeah. And I don't know. I mean, like,
you don't see that drag queen
in this episode.
In this episode.
But I don't know if he identifies solely as a he, or if he is now identifying as a she. But that's not the point of the character.
Right.
It's that Danny is so accepting that they were able to come in and become who they are fully, whereas they had been in this regimented governmental normalcy place.
Bullshit.
Sean would also like to point out that the yellow, white, and purple and black flag that Danny lowers in one of these scenes is to half-mast is the non-binary flag.
Nice.
I like the non-binary. It's cool looking.
Yeah.
Yeah. I like the transplant. I like all the flags, but like, I mean, did you know that like the whole LGBTQ plus IA flag spectrum of things? I've spent hours like scrolling and looking at them and like reading the little descriptions, and there's a bunch of different, there's so many, there's hundreds, right? And I do not feel that way about countries' flags at all. I'll be like, oh great, that one's green and white. That's fantastic. That's great. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Yeah. Oh, those ones are vertical stripes. Okay, that's great.
Yeah. Okay, now we got to get back to the episode.
I'm sorry, yes.
So I could talk about Danny forever.
My favorite part when Rita confronts Danny. No, she's confronting. She's yelling.
Yeah. Okay. So the Doom Patrol come into Danny Street, and they're just sort of like, they don't understand what all of this is. But Larry, who has been here before, kind of says, "Oh yeah, this is Danny. They're a non-binary sentient street," and so.
But then Flex has been there too,
right?
And he's like, "Hey," they're like, "Hey, Flex,
how's Dolly?"
Dolly, and he goes, "We lost her."
Right. Oh, and like when they first show up, there's a wacky waving inflatable arm tube man that just goes whoop up, and
yeah, because he's they're waving.
Yeah, and then Flex says that Dolly's not here anymore, and he goes and hugs the wacky waving inflatable arm tube man.
There's just sorries everywhere. Yeah. I'm so sorry.
And then Rita points out the beard hunter whose name is Ernest, and she's like, "Ernest. Ernest, hey, hey."
And then she marches, but she's very proper.
Yeah. And he kind of like hides himself. And that's when Rita confronts him and is just like, "Where's the chief?" And he's saying, I was trying to find the chief and I couldn't, but Danny found me instead and got me off of the beard hair. So there's also treating it as like this addiction.
Which makes sense. And he's much less creepy now.
Yeah. But then Cliff and Jane get a hold of him. And this is where we see another one of Jane's identities. Hammerhead.
Yes.
And he's got the Ernest Beard Hunter has his groceries and she pulls out bananas.
Rita, however, says, she goes, "Cliff, do something unpleasant." And he like punches his groceries.
Yeah. And then Hammerhead grabs the bananas and she threatens him with, "Tell us what you know about the chief or I'm going to shove these bananas
up your butt.
Heels on. Yes. And they start doing that and Danny's like, whoa.
I know where
Niles is. And Larry's just like, "You could have told us this the entire time.
I was scared of Mr. Nobody."
Yeah. And
at one point Rita's really mad and she's just like, "We went all the way up. Donkeys mustn't touch it."
Yeah.
Which is now what I'm gonna call my butthole. Yeah.
So, they get Danny to kind of confess that. Then we cut back to
Daddy drama.
Silas wakes up.
Did you notice? I wonder if you saw this. And I know we got to move on. But, like, his injuries make him look like his son. he's got like the whole side of his face, like his son's whole side of his face is now like.
It's the, yeah, his Vic's left side is the one that has the
cybernetic
and stuff.
Yeah.
And Silas's left eye is like bulging because he's been repeatedly punched.
Yeah.
And it's still very present. And I like that about the makeup is that they don't like have it go away after like a day or so.
Yeah.
It's still there.
Yeah. But also I think it shows them both being blinded in a way that's similar. Mm-hmm. And that's one of the things they have to come to.
Right. And so Vic is like apologizing. He's like, you know, I should have just done what you said. I should have just had kept Grid in and I wouldn't have been taken advantage of by Mr. Nobody. Silas is like, well, there's more to the story that you should know. And then it cuts back to they have to like go into where Niles is and he's
where,
in the white
where
space.
Where is he, Danny? He's in the white space. And then Flex is like, oh, I know where that is. And they're like, what? And he's like, holds up a comic and he's like, you see these spaces in between the panels?
Mm-hmm.
This white space?
Yeah.
That's where he is. He's in the gap in narration, you know?
Yeah.
And he's like, I can get you there.
I have a flex for that.
I have a flex for that. Which means, like, it reminds me of me trying to explain to grandma what weird flex but okay was.
Yeah.
One of the best afternoons of my life. Okay, yeah, grandma, somebody's like, I have 1,000 rubber ducks. And you're like, weird flex but okay.
Yeah.
He embodies that. Yeah. She got it, but she's promptly lost it.
Yeah.
She doesn't need it.
Yeah. And so he's like, okay, so all you have to do is focus on the white space.
So they all hold hands.
And so they all hold hands and they focus on the white space and he flexes his muscles.
I don't think anything's happening.
I do feel something is what Rita says. And then you hear
like everyone starts to like freak out.
Yeah.
And Cliff is like, what is going on?
Cliff, Flex doesn't know what's going on.
Oh, Flex knows what's going on.
Oh,
well, he doesn't know. No.
Right. But then Jane screams out, we're f***ing coming, man. Because when he flexed his muscles, he flexed the wrong one. And he caused everybody in this.
Everyone, including Danny, orgasm. It's hilarious. They're all adults. Let's just put that out there, which is real nice.
Yeah. Also, if you just want to, it's really hard to really go over bit by bit on this scene.
Yeah.
And it really is something you just need to watch.
Yes.
So if you go to YouTube, type in.
No, wait a second. Put on private. Put it on private browsing. I mean,
if you want to. It's on YouTube. And go to do a search for Doom Patrol wrong flex. It'll probably be the first thing that pops
up. Probably be the first thing.
And it's like every.
It's hilarious. All of the reaction shots, Danny going crazy.
Yeah.
Like, it is a delight.
They have this old lady in like a floral dress with a little, you know, scarf on her neck and she's on a walker and they show her having an orgasm. They show.
You know, there's been an underrepresentation of queer and women peoples. Mm-hmm. Like orgasming on screen, and this scene makes up for a lot of it.
And for all of the diversity on Danny the street, everybody has a diversity of O faces.
Yes, but we should mention that the beard hunter like sidles up to a guy with a beard and without touching him because he does not have time or capacity to ask for consent, just proceeds to ogle his face.
Yeah.
Dude doesn't seem mad about it.
No, he like when everybody's done, he Beard Hunter pulls out a cigarette for the guy and then pulls out a cigarette for himself
and they're both into it.
Yeah.
They're super down.
Now
that we've had a group orgasm, let's go back to daddy drama. Cheese and crackers, I swear.
So Silas essentially admits that he both Vic and his mom were in a place where they were both technically alive after the explosion, but they could only really save one with. And it seems like what they were going to do is use their these nanobots in Cyborg, and they were going to use those for. They could have used them for one, and because of the fact that Vic's mom was older, Niles had. Convinced Silas to use it on Vic because Vic was younger. He was in much better condition. And Silas still said, no, I'm not going to do this. But then Niles said, it's what she would have wanted, which is actually true when you kind of like, not just in the flashbacks that you get in season one, but I think in like season three Vic has a heart-to-heart with his mom. And she's like, yeah, that's what I would have wanted, and I'm in a good place right now, so don't worry about it.
Mm-hmm. Well, and any parent would tell you.
Yes, I would rather die than have my child die in my place.
Yeah. I'm sure there's the odd parent who's a total dick who's like, no, kill the kid.
Right.
A Disney villain parent.
But the reason why Vic is so angry at his dad is because Silas let Vic think that it was Vic's fault for killing his mom. And at no point did he correct him. And he just kind of fed into that memory. And Vic is like, you didn't just mess with my body, which was kind of like the reason why he didn't like his dad in the first place. But he like kind of, you know, understands it to a point. Mm-hmm. But it's more the fact that his dad messed with his memories.
Yes.
And then he's like, I got my own family I got a family who cares about me, and I'm going to go and...
My chosen family. And he marches away.
Yeah.
We cut back to Danny, and...
Flex is so apologetic and everything.
I'm so sorry. But then, at one point, Jane's like, why were you screaming, Cliff? You don't feel anything.
Oh, yeah, that was the thing we didn't mention. Cliff is, like, looking around and seeing everybody having this orgasm, and he starts faking an orgasm.
Yeah, and he's like, I had too much respect for you to not fake an orgasm, which sounds like something you'd tell a lover, that like you were like, no, I just...
He does get back to the whole he was afraid that he was getting left out.
Yeah, he got to the truth.
Yeah.
I wouldn't be mad about it. So let's go back into memories. Is it a memories? No, they go back into the memories. So, he flexed the right muscle.
Right, they go into the white space, uh-huh. And then they get stuck in memories.
Na 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 breakfast. Na 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 set for the movie. Na na loony bin, cheating den.
So this is before everybody gets their powers, and it's idyllic, sort of. This is like before they really have to grapple with their own personal issues.
Yeah, Alan Tudyk is now narrating, and he's just like, and now you're at this place where you don't have to experience what you did before. You get the life you want. I'm giving you everything you want. You don't have to suffer that. This is all just before the traumatic event. Right when they thought, back when they thought their life was perfect.
Right. You know, Larry is still in the closet with, you know, the idyllic family. He's got this, you know, big thing that's going to, you know, get his career up and going. And he's essentially going to be set up for life.
Mm-hmm.
And then Cliff can go ahead and... He's not tethered to his family, which in the first episode you can kind of see is like maybe not something that he was really happy. Like his marriage wasn't happy. Banging the nanny and still being a race car rock star. And then Rita is she's the lead in a movie.
Mm-hmm.
And she's doing all good and everything. Jane is probably the one who doesn't have the most going for her because she's stuck in a mental hospital.
But it's before whatever happened in the mental hospital really made her fracture.
It wasn't before the fracture. It was before she got the jab in her neck that gave her superpowers. And all of her identities get powers as well.
Okay.
But we don't see Vic because he's not there. But this is a moment where everybody is kind of grappling with, like, who am I and who do I want to be? And so...
Yeah, this is right where they think their life pivoted.
Right. And Rita is in her dressing tent. And someone comes in and is like, you know, Rita, we got to, you know, start this movie. And
that creepy guy with the arm who makes you feel weird, we fired him.
Yeah. Back in the first episode when we're seeing everything. Or maybe it's either the first or second episode. I think it's the second episode, actually. She's faced with the fact that she had someone on set get fired simply because he didn't have an arm and it made her feel uncomfortable.
Right, which echoes her whole problem with her own deformity.
Right. But it also echoes the fact that she isn't perfect in Hollywood. And like that was before her deformity actually took place.
Mm-hmm.
But it echoes her stance and kind of where she's been stuck ever since then.
Yeah.
She feels like she is not good enough, and it makes her feel so uncomfortable that she just wants to hide away from the rest of the world.
Mm-hmm.
Larry is at a place where he is with his family. He's in this idealized, place in his life.
Mm-hmm.
And if he doesn't leave his family, doesn't, if he still stays tethered to him, then, you know, he can still live the lie that he is not actually gay.
Yeah. Yeah. And I mean, like, I think Jane feels safety.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
Where she's at. I mean, like, even if you have found a comfortable space, like, it's that whole bird falling into a pile of crap. It's warm right now, so I'm going to stay here because I think it's safe.
Right.
But you're not really safe there. And I think that we have spent the last, I don't remember what episode of the is it like episode 12 or something, 13?
Yeah, something like that.
We've had 11 other episodes of them all like painstakingly going through all of this. It's what nobody was yelling out at the end of the last episode. He's like, ugh, all of this self-indulgent, inward-looking, finding ourselves bull, and now we finally get to the action.
Mm-hmm.
And so, like, they're all like, oh, I could choose not to do this, but all of them are like, all four of them mm-hmm. are like, oh no, I'm better because I went through this, because I stopped denying myself, because I started believing in myself, because I had a reality check that made me a more mature person.
Yeah. Do you know what intrapersonal skills are?
I what does that mean?
Okay.
I just called you. That was a joke, like the other ones I mentioned earlier.
Oh yeah.
I don't mean it. It was interpersonal.
What does it mean? Like, what does it mean to have an?
No. I was calling you. Yeah. There was a comma, and I was calling you an.
So you
is
know,
it interpersonal what now?
Yeah. It's interpersonal. There's interpersonal, which is how you can communicate with other people.
Oh.
Intrapersonal oh. is how you see yourself and how you can identify the things, the bad habits in your life mm. that are ultimately kind of tearing you down and stopping you from progressing through your life. Like, you know, Rita does not see herself as being this perfection that she has in her room, just all of these posters of how she looked back in her heyday. And she can't really let go of that because of, you know, what happened to her, but also because of the fact that she's like, even though I look good, I'm not a good person on the inside.
Mm-hmm.
So her having that moment with old guy Ed Asner and like recognizing that, you know, she has never really been a good person, but she recognizes that, you know, there, and that's the whole thing. When you have those big issues that you have in the past and you kind of work away from them, you recognize that I was back when I was a teenager, and then you work away from that as an adult. That is having intrapersonal skills, intrapersonal, because okay. you're looking inward.
Now, thank you for illuminating that to me, because I was like, I didn't hear it. I heard interpersonal, and I was like, I know how to, and that's why I called you an but intra, yeah. I'm working on. So
yeah,
I appreciate the correction.
But like everybody is like kind of going through, and this is the interesting thing. You could very easily argue that all of them before they had got their powers, became metahumans, they were living in a situation that was just trauma after trauma after trauma. And part of it was because of the fact that they were feeding into these bad habits,
mm-hmm.
but also because of societal pressures, the expectations that were put on them. Like Cliff was expected to be in a happy marriage, and he wasn't in a happy marriage. And like, I'm not trying to say that his wife was abusive or anything, but not being in a happy marriage has to cause something in the way of trauma. And so you're reliving it by not getting out of that happy marriage.
Well, I mean, he had self-destructive habits that led to his unhappy marriage. Like, I'm not saying he's the sole cause.
Right.
It takes two to tango, but he was not helping anybody with what he was doing.
Right.
And all five of these characters really have only had these perpetuating self-harming behaviors. They've been introspective, but not in a helpful way. They have main charactered themselves into this terrible place. But what is great about this scene, what relieves my anxiety, not anxiety, what lets me release the gas that has built up until now, mm-hmm. is they all turn around and are like, nope.
Mm-hmm.
And they all decide to leave the scenario which they had been designed to stay in for their own edification, their own gratification.
Right. Writing wise, they don't do it right away. They're like, they're still kind of on the fence at the beginning.
They do dance with it. And I do have to watch Brendan Fraser hump a lady.
Yeah.
I don't like it very much. In fact, I might have just cut that all out of my mind.
Right. Also, I like how they wrote Jane in there, because she was like Hammerhead just comes in and she starts Jane's scenario is that she's in this mental hospital and she's boarded up a room.
Barricaded
a room, mm-hmm. and with all these chairs. And when she hears the narration from Mr. Nobody, Hammerhead, her identity that has super strength, you know, and is also like really angry.
Yeah, she punk.
She pulls everything off, but Jane like wrestles back control and she puts the chairs back and is like, no, we have to do this because we need to keep people safe. We need to stay in here
right.
for ourselves. And Hammerhead is the identity that is like, nope, this is when we got, a bite to our bark.
Yes.
And I love it so much.
Yeah. This is where we got our powers that help us protect the girl. And that's all we're here about.
Right.
I love that part. Mm-hmm. They all march out into the night or whatever.
Right. And then they're in the void with Rita. And all we see is Rita in the void.
Well, don't you want to cut back from some daddy drama?
Oh, yeah. Well, we already talked about the what goes on in this scene, so I wasn't going to talk about it again.
But Cyborg has the same revelation without being in a magical void.
Oh.
Do you see how he did that?
Yeah.
Without being manipulated by Dr. Nobody, which probably would have f***ed with him again, mm-hmm. now that I'm thinking about it.
Yeah.
He was just like, no, I needed to have this. I mean, obviously he doesn't want his mom to die.
Right.
But he's like, if it had happened any other way, I would not be at the place where I am, where I recognize what needs to be done.
Mm-hmm.
And you're a for messing with my mind, because that's what Nobody did. And I don't need that. I need people who love me, respect me, communicate with me. Guess what? I have a chosen family. I got to go help them now. Mm-hmm. And that's when he marches out. And it's in reflection to what happened to the other four, except there's this kind of magic. And his is like very solidly real, which is totally in line with his character.
Right. Very good. Thank you for pointing that out.
Putting that out there for you.
Yeah. So Rita's in the void and she hears Mr. Nobody narrating for her. And she's like,
this is what reminds me of you about her.
Oh, because I would be like, for narrating for me.
They're lost in the void forever to be sad in the wandering. For
nope.
Excuse me.
I'm going to march forward.
Excuse me. What are you doing?
And I'm going to find my friends.
What are you doing?
I'm narrating my own life, bitch.
Yeah. Go, Lydia. Go, Rita. Go, Lydia. Go, Rita. Hell yeah.
She doesn't say it as crass. She's more prim and proper. But she does say, and then suddenly everybody was back together again.
Yes.
And it's not just like the Doom Patrol, like Niles shows up and everybody's like, where's Jane? And Niles says, Jane, she comes in her own time.
True.
Yeah. And so they find Mr. Nobody and he's just like, you know, talking about.
I like that when he walks in, he's like, Cliff goes, real you looks like a real dweeb.
Yeah. He goes into his like interdimensional form.
Yeah.
And he's just like, this is the big battle. And is this how you're going to defeat me?
Well, then let's have Jane show up.
Jane shows up. Jane doesn't show up.
No, that's correct.
Dr. Harrison shows up.
She is scary spice right there.
Yeah. And this is why I love Diane Guerrero so much, is because of the fact that you can see her switching between Jane, between Hammerhead, and between Dr. Harrison. And it's all these different personalities that she, as a great actress, you know, just puts out there in the universe. Mm-hmm. And you should just put her in everything, because she's great.
Okay.
But Dr. Harrison says, why do you need to fight? And
I could be in charge of this whole streaming service if I want to.
Actually, Rita showed that isn't true, because she was able to narrate her own life.
I just like, there's so much self-reference that it's just beautiful.
Right. And then she says, what exactly are you hiding from? Or do you have or is it that you have a problem with women? And that's when we see Millie show up and say, you'll just be a nobody. And then he reverts from his interdimensional form to his human form.
Right.
And then I love what Cliff and Larry say. Cliff was like, you became bad because you got dumped.
Understandable.
And
relatable.
Larry says, babe. Basic. And Mr. Nobody's like, I'm not basic. And then Niles chimes in, no, you don't want to. You are basic, but you want to be original. And then it just is like they're tearing him down. And
he goes full red interdimensional form. And then Cyborg shows up and pows him. And
right.
he's like, don't condescend to me. Right. But then he gets poofed out. And they're like, what? That's it. And Cyborg's like, he said not to patronize him or whatever.
Do you notice that Vic isn't wearing... So in the last two episodes, Vic's been wearing an orange jumpsuit.
Yeah. But from the ant farm.
From the ant farm. Is he wearing the orange jumpsuit right now?
No, he's wearing a red outfit, but maybe he had time for a costume change?
Maybe he had time for a costume change. I don't know. But it doesn't matter. Mr. Nobody's defeated and they're back in the house 1 year later.
Okay, so watching this, now here's the thing. It's been like the better part of a year, if not more, that I've watched this, right? Mm-hmm. But my first note is, it's too perfect, right? And then I'm like, did you notice they're wearing matching outfits?
Yeah.
Never in any episode are they wearing matching outfits.
Never.
Rita is always prim with these fantastic prints. And she's wearing a blocky, less pretty, I would say, but red and white print. And they all show up in some sort, even if they have like an outer jacket or something
like
that.
It's like a red and white theme, which back at the episode Doom Patrol, they show
titles
the
are so good.
They show the original Doom Patrol and they all have red and white outfits.
Oh.
So it's a callback to that. But also their dialogue is so stilted.
Yeah.
Like they got the camaraderie. They're like, "Oh, we have to go and get ready for a meeting." And
I've been down here since 10 minutes till.
Yeah.
Always setting an example, Rita.
And Jane says, "Do your powers give you the ability to go to put your nose so far up as
I'm just back from my run."
That's Vic. And yeah. And then and now it's like, "Oh, we got to do this meeting." And Larry says,
"Oh, or do you mean breakfast?
Chocolate chip pancakes?
You ate all the chocolate chips yesterday."
Oh.
Alarm goes off. We have to go find the emergency. It'd be such a shame to waste all this beautiful food. And she walks away with the platter.
And
of
he's
bacon.
Just like, "Make sure you hold on to your own bacon."
Right. So then the gray school bus van pulls up to the Doom van. What are we calling this? Doom bus.
Doom patrol bus.
Up to a park and they're like, "Is it that thing?" Cut to Cliff says, "Is it that thing?" And it cuts to
a giant red robot, which is kind of similar to some of the different things that Mr. Nobody or Eric Morden had when he got fired from the Brotherhood of Evil. There was a tiny little red robot.
Problem was, none of them saw that flashback. It was just us.
Yeah, that was solely for the audience.
Yeah. So they're like, well, Rita's like, "Oh, as long as the regular people are okay." And then
Jane says, or actually it's Hammerhead, and she says, "F the regular people."
Right. And that's when they get zapped.
They get killed.
They get particularly zapped.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
And then the entire scene happens again. But instead of getting zapped, they get stomped. And then the entire scene happens again. But instead of getting stomped, they get rocket blasted.
And in all of these scenarios, when they get killed, Niles is looking onward and he screams no. And then it's this whole montage.
Okay, this is the order. Zapped, stomped, blasted, stomped, vaporized, blasted, stomped, zapped, blasted, stomped, blasted, stomped.
The what I would say is this is a montage of them constantly getting killed, and but it changes with each time there's a loop. And so like you hear some of those little jabs coming back, like, you know, "Let's call it what it really is, breakfast. You stick your nose all the way up as..." and then there are moments where you see Niles like crying no in different ways.
Yeah.
And there's a song that's playing over the entire montage. It is Perry Como's "Hot Diggity Dog Ziggity." Do you know how it goes?
No.
"Oh, hot diggity dog ziggity boom, what you do to me? It's so new to me, what you do to me?" So it's this like montage of their death over and over again.
Terrible.
But it's also a callback. Go ahead and take
Okay. Yeah, okay.
Yeah. Cliffhangers.
And cliffhangers my whole life. Okay, what is it a callback to?
It's a callback to the episode Doom Patrol, in which the Doom Patrol, like I think their last mission was fighting this giant butt that played Perry Como's "Hot Diggity." And it was like, it was causing everybody to go insane and like, you know, cut people open. And when they did, there would be pinatas. It would be like a pinata and there would be candy on the inside. And it was, I mean, it's a callback to another episode. So like,
oh, but is that when Mr. Nobody was introduced?
No, this was back when you knew Mr. Nobody had taken Niles. But the original Doom Patrol was fighting the Brotherhood of Evil. So like throughout the entire season, you kind of get this feeling that Mr. Nobody is working for the Brotherhood of Evil, but then you find out in this episode that in fact he got fired. So, yeah. but like, it's Niles figures out what's going on, and he's like, I don't think we killed Mr. Nobody, because, and that makes sense, because, which actually makes sense, because there's the giant robot mm-hmm. that Eric wanted to make. There's the callback to when the Brotherhood of Evil used a Perry Como song in this. And I think, like, there's something about the scenery in this scene where it's like the landscape where everybody is just, you know, bright and colorful. And they're running on this green field. And it's similar to the green field that the original Doom Patrol actually used. So it was like, Mr. Nobody was saying, I'm trying to be like the Brotherhood of Evil in Niles's mind, mm-hmm. But I'm going to be successful, and I'm going to kill the Doom Patrol.
Yeah.
Over and over and over. And that's why Niles is like, oh, I don't think we killed Mr. Nobody.
Yeah, he's such a genius that he sees the crack in it, and then Vic shows up behind Vic.
Right. And this is a Vic who was like in that orange jumpsuit, the one that he was in for the last two episodes.
Yeah. I wonder how long they were in that loop.
Yeah.
Because it doesn't seem very long.
No. But it's in the void and, you know, Mr. Nobody can control it. Anyways, there are two Vics.
In the thing, they do say, like, didn't we get rid of Mr. Nobody last year?
Yeah.
Right. But, like, what's the actual time? Right. Were they in the void for a full year?
Did they just feel like it was just a year mm-hmm. long?
I've had dreams that felt like they were a lot longer than they were.
Right.
Like, you've had a 5-minute dream that was, like, a year of your life or whatever.
It feels like a year.
Yeah.
Do you remember that episode of Doctor Who? It was a Capaldi episode.
where he eternals his way through the unbreakable thing?
Yeah.
That's terrifying.
Yeah, it's kind of like that.
Never give up, because soon you'll stop breaking your hand against that unbreakable wall before you get eaten by the beast. It's a terrifying episode.
Yeah. And it ends up being like this loop that he gets it.
He like made it.
To capture his most deepest secret or something like that.
I don't know.
Doesn't matter. And this time, in this place, in this show, it's just torture.
Yeah.
So the reality that Mr. Nobody has made fractures so that now they're all back in the white space again. Did right. they ever leave?
But when Mr. Nobody is actually revealed, Jovan Wade starts playing Mad Scientist. And I love how he plays it up just as an actor. Because he starts like laughing. He's like, oh, turns out the Vic that killed Mr. Nobody was me. And he starts maniacally laughing. And yes. it's so delicious.
The
and I love
CGI
it.
CGI of him ballooning into from this mm-hmm. kind of slight, well built, but mm-hmm. like this slight younger black man mm-hmm. into this older white guy.
<Yeah.
laughs> Like it's weird looking, yeah. but it's good.
Right. Also, I like it when shows have actors play so when you have a show like this where you have a multiple cast and like you do body switching episodes, then it gives the actors the ability to change their show their acting chops on how their other characters would work. And it's like, I love it. Like I don't see it enough, and I feel like I'm constantly jonesing for it.
So you've watched all of The Good Place?
No. Okay, so now I have a reason to watch The Good Place.
Okay. There's this character named Janet, and mm-hmm. she's not a girl, not a robot.
Okay.
But she's this, she's a she. She is not a girl, but she's a she. Has all of the knowledge of the universe mm-hmm. and can provide it in the afterlife like that, right?
Right.
Like she just blinks it into existence. And at some point she becomes, and I don't want to give it away, but she becomes each of the characters who are in The Good Place. And Ted Danson was watching the actress whose name I don't remember off the top of my head, but she was like, she was watching Eleanor is the name of the character. The actress of yeah. Janet was playing what's his face, the Filipino guy, Jason Mendoza.
Mm-hmm.
Janet's body was Jason Mendoza talking to Janet as Chidi Anagonye, right? And Janet Chidi was like, I can't be with Eleanor. And Janet Jason was just like, oh, man, I'm just Arizona trash garbage, blah, blah, blah. I can't, blah, you should really think about it. And then he goes, you're not Jason. You're Eleanor pretending to be Jason. And then it's Eleanor Janet, and she's like, look, because Ted Danson watches this scene, and he goes, Janet, who's, again, I can't remember her name off my top, she goes, Janet's doing a really bad job of being Jason. And then he goes, and then I realized that it was Janet, actress lady, pretending to be Jason by pretending to be Eleanor. So there was like three layers deep of it, and she was phenomenal.
Okay.
So when you say you love...
Well, I love it when actors are were in a, like a body switching episode where characters go into different different characters' bodies.
Yes.
And then the actors have to act. Like in this case where Jovan Wade has to act like Alan Tudyk's Mr. Nobody.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. I'm just saying that in this Good Place episode, it's three layers deep of that.
Right.
And it fooled Ted Danson, an amazing actor.
Good.
He was just like, my God. And I'm like, if you make him say that.
What? So was she actually like trying to, what was Eleanor, or excuse me, was Janet trying to make fun of the other characters?
No, okay. So Janet was just the body.
Oh, okay. So, and so the personality was put into Janet.
Eleanor's personality was in Janet.
Okay.
But Eleanor wanted to trick Janet Cheedy.
Mm-hmm.
So Eleanor Janet had to pretend to be Jason Janet.
Okay.
So there was like, boom, boom, boom.
Okay.
It's amazing. Okay. I'm just saying that if you like body switching, amazing acting, that's one of the best scenes I've ever seen in the whole of my life.
Nice.
It's worth watching all four seasons, Lydia.
Because you're not going to tell me which one.
No.
I'll just Google it later.
Fine. But let's be back in the white space.
Okay, fine. So it's big reveal. Mr. Nobody, they never left the white space. Mm-hmm. Mr. Nobody threatens to keep them in there, doing this loop, constantly forcing them to die and let Niles watch. Unless...
What will set you free, Niles? What will set you free? And you see him start to sweat.
Right. The truth will set you free.
And they're like, what? We've all been very truthful. We've all come from these very painful places. You can say anything to us, Niles. Niles, you can say anything you want to us because we have realized that what has harmed us has brought us to this moment. We are stronger together. I'm paraphrasing and putting in my own words. And you're one of us, Niles. We love you so much. There's nothing you can say that will this up.
And then Niles says the one thing that set up.
It's really kind of brilliant.
Yeah. He's like, I'm the reason that all of you got your superpowers.
And then he elaborates. He goes, I caused every single situation that made you who you are, which means he caused the car wreck. It means he caused the explosion. It means he released the gas. It means he broke Jane.
No, he didn't.
He injected Jane.
He was the reason she got the shot. Yeah. And he was, and we also know because of the earlier in this episode that Niles was the reason that Vic became Cyborg.
Right, instead of his mom. Even though it would be the morally correct decision.
Right. And also it's interesting cuz let's see. Rita was the first. She's the oldest.
Uh-huh.
Then you have Larry, and then you have Jane, and then you have Cliff. And then you have Vic. If you have ever like I'm from a relatively large family. I got three older sisters. But you will see as the youngest, I see my parents making mistakes with my older sisters that they don't necessarily make with me. And so I feel like even though Niles had messed up on all of them, when he gets down to Vic, it is the morally correct.
He's trying.
Yeah. He is trying.
He's
to
not
do
just
right.
Like, oh, we got to science up this,
which is what he started out with. Like, I mean, later on in the next episode, you do see you see Niles's point of view. And when it comes to like Larry, you can see him like, yep, we got to science up this. Go ahead. He's a soldier. This is what he's made for. This is what he signed up for. And so you see the progression. It's disjointed and you don't see it linear, but you do see the fact that, you know, Niles is trying to be a good person in the same way that he knows he messed up with his kids, so to speak.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, he's trying to make it better. So.
And then Lydia, what did you do to me?
Cliffhanger!
I love you so much. I can't believe you left me here.
I could have chosen other episodes. I wanted to do television episodes, and my original thought was to do Therapy Patrol and Danny Patrol.
No, but not Danny.
But I love both of those so much that I couldn't find, you know, fault with them. And I feel like these episodes are more down to earth, mm-hmm. and they're more along the lines
of, like...
You want
to do the Dada episodes?
I don't understand the Dada episodes.
I understand the Dada episodes.
Great. I should watch those with you so that way you can educate me. Or we could just watch Red Dwarf.
I'm going to make you watch so much Red Dwarf. Explain so many Red Dwarf scenes on this podcast.
So that's not the end of the show, but that is definitely the end of this episode.
Of this part of that. Whatever.
Yeah.
Now we get down to our, if we have any remaining Sean facts.
Oh, just really two minor ones. One of them is that Rita was a Olympic medalist for swimming before she became an actress in the comics. And in the comic book Scooby-Doo Team-Up issue 43, the Doom Patrol teamed up with the Mystery Gang.
Nice.
That's it.
Scooby-Doo is canon in this universe, and they haven't used that yet? Okay. Well, then, shall we just get to it?
Shall I? Yeah, I can start with my shocked.
Let's do it.
Okay. Okay, so my shocked moment is probably in Flex Patrol, in the last scene that we see with Rita and Vic. I don't really like the dialogue because Vic is so, he's on the fence about putting Grid back into his body. Eventually, Rita convinces him using, like, you know, Mr. Nobody's a bully and we have to fight back and that sort of thing. I feel like Vic's come around is just sort of like, okay.
He's a bad guy. We should stop the bad guy. Yeah. Okay, we'll stop the bad guy.
And I really just think that for how good the writing is, this is the weaker point in the two episodes because of the fact that Vic could have very easily been like, yeah, I know that we have to stop Mr. Nobody. I'm really worried about putting Grid back in. And then Rita gives her whole like speech about like, she should have been like, look, Vic, I get that you are worried about Grid. And, you know, if you don't want to go ahead and install Grid again, then, you know, we'll find another way to find the Beard Hunter. And left it less as like Rita has to convince Vic and more like Vic is like, no, this is just going to be the easiest way. And I'm probably going to have to install Grid again just to, you know, function. And I just would have preferred dialogue that leaned more towards like Vic coming to the realization of like, no, this is something that I need to do. And
yeah, his subordinate narrative is too strong.
Right. Especially in this episode. And it would have led more to his character of saying like, you know, he's trying to find his independence throughout the entire show. And he's kind of like waffling in this episode because he hurt his dad and in the penultimate patrol, he hurt his dad. And he's like, I don't know. I should have just listened to you. I shouldn't be like, you know, independent and everything. And then when his dad confesses what he did. So even though it's like the boring parts of the episode for you, it was still like, it still to me was like meat on the bone. It was still like a good, like if you have chicken and mashed potatoes.
I love it when you use this metaphor.
And you have just like the like grilled veg or you like sautéed vegetables, you uh-huh. know, the way that your mom makes them with, yes. you know, seasoning and butter.
Yeah.
Yeah. And you just have like this, it's like Doom Patrol to me is like, is like a feast, like Christmas dinner, but yeah. but it's not all junk food. You also have like all of this healthy food that tastes good along with it.
Yeah, it's just that this dish happened to be like reheated frozen vegetables, which are fine, but if you haven't dressed them, they're just plain microwaved vegetables.
Yeah.
That's what it feels like.
Yeah.
And I complained so hard about it that my shocked moment is,
yeah,
do I have daddy issues? I hated those scenes so much. I mean, like, I know I have daddy issues. Most of us do. We have issues with all of our parents. That's the human condition. But every time they showed up, I was like, Vic is obviously a goody-goody. He's going to come around to the side of the righteous. Like, it's going to be fine. His dad is probably a more complicated character. He's going to have done a douchey thing. But he raised such a good kid that he probably did it for a noble reason. We just don't know what that is yet. And it just was like, no, the entire time. And it made me want to scream into the void.
That's valid. And also, that's really good intrapersonal skills.
Thanks. Gold star. Jen, how about you? You got a shocked one?
I It's hard for me. It's been a while. It's been a couple years since I've seen the whole season together. So it's hard for me to remember exactly how much influence Mr. Nobody had before the eventual meetup in the penultimate patrol. But I would have liked to have seen him interact as other people more than just really with Rita. I think that if he had kind of nudged more of the characters leading up to the penultimate and the white void, then maybe it would have given a little bit more angst within each character when they do finally meet up. It just it kind of seems like it's a very one-on-one challenge between Mr. Nobody and Chief, and that the other characters aren't as invested in that meetup. But yeah,
that's valid too, because like for how little, like Rita and Larry interact a lot together, Rita and Vic interact a lot together, but Vic and Larry don't really interact a lot. Cliff and Jane are pretty much attached to the hip, but they don't really interact with anybody else. I mean, you see like Jane, give Rita some like ribs every now and then, but you don't see them interact on like a friendly basis. I mean, like, I think later on in the season, in the other seasons, you do see them interact, but season two was cut short because of COVID. And so you don't really, you see more of how they're interacting with Niles's daughter, Dorothy. Spoilers.
Can't wait.
Yeah. So what was your applaud moment, Jen?
Oh, man. I'll just applaud anytime Danny the Street is on. Just even if it's not Danny the Street, if it's just Danny the Brick.
How many conversations did Danny start, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, he started the one with Morally Corrupt. When Vic and Larry got back on there. I mean, maybe we should just do an episode where we're just talking about Danny.
We could. What I meant by conversations is who watched it and was like, this show is awesome. What the hell is a genderqueer, non-binary sentient street? What is that about? And somebody had to be like, okay, well, you see, a street doesn't have a vagina or a penis. And if it had to choose, it wouldn't choose either. So it doesn't have a gender. It's agender. In fact, they don't want to be gendered so much that he and she are not preferred. They would rather them or they. When you refer to them, you use them. And if you want to say they are going to do something, you say they.
And yet is somehow not asexual.
Oh no, not asexual, because participated in the art. Well, you can experience an orgasm and not be sexual. I misspoke. Definitely not asexual because of the strip club or the peekaboo lounge or whatever.
Peeping Tom's cabaret of something.
I mean, definitely has a number of sexual people living on their streetness.
Yeah.
Polyamorous, maybe?
Maybe. Mm-hmm. I mean, like, doesn't necessarily seem to have does not have a sexual relationship with everyone on the street. I don't, on themselves. But like, I mean, could if they chose to, I suppose. Doesn't matter. Has the ability to orgasm. Go you, Danny.
Yeah.
And here's the other thought that came to me about specifically of Danny is that it could have pretty easily been interpreted the wrong way, as in like everybody's got to have some kind of gender identity and be queer in some way. They've got to be snowflakes, and it doesn't end up being this like we're putting this in as a mock to anybody that has a unique identity. That does happen when people will, if you watch enough Law and Order late in the 90s, early 2000s, and, you know, you get to see all of these one-off victims and they've all got, you know, things. And then one of the cops will make some, you know, dumb remark about their...
Oh, she was a prostitute. We prefer the term sex worker, but I'm quoting the made-up scenario in my head. She was a sex worker. Turns out she had a little something extra in her knickers.
Mm-hmm.
And then she deserved to die?
Don't you mean shim? Yeah.
Yeah.
Fuck that era.
It's a really good portrayal of just someone who's non-binary.
And everybody loves Danny the Street. And that's why I'm saying a good conversation. Because mom who's watching it with kid number X is like, I love Danny the Street. I don't get the pronoun thing.
Mm-hmm.
That's the conversation that needs to happen. A right. Positive image. Even if it's a non-person entity.
Yeah.
Would you like to hear my applaud moment?
Yes.
It goes thus. Your gentle caress of the fourth wall. I love it. Every time they break it. Every time. Every straight to camera in this show is not shit, and I am one to hate on a straight to camera if it's bad. You've heard me say it. I don't like to watch The Office. Jim is a sociopath, and I will say it again. He messed with people that I liked and fought for a girl that wasn't his and not in her time. And his straight to cameras make me want to hit him in the throat. However, Alan Tudyk can enter my life and be a peripheral character. And every time I do something cringy, he can straight to camera for me and be like, well, that's a thing that happened. And I'd be like, yes, Alan, it was a thing that happened. And I would accept that event with a lot more grace than I do now.
Have you ever seen Dollhouse?
Yeah.
Is that...
He was the villain in that. And that, I mean, that is a...
Joss Whedon?
Joss Whedon, yeah. Yeah. It's a Joss Whedon show, so it doesn't hold up, but...
Well, it doesn't hold up, not just because of Joss Whedon, but because there's a lot of iffy stuff. Like, I justified liking Dollhouse when it first came out.
I liked it too, but in retrospect, I'm like that is awful. That is like what they're, it's what Adam Scott is doing in Severance. Have you seen Severance yet?
No.
The idea of separating your working self from your real self mm-hmm. is problematic at best.
Yeah.
And so, like, they explore it if you get a chance to watch Severance, do it. It's amazing. But that's the problem with Dollhouse.
Yeah.
If you're not there,
you're not actually consenting.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But the thing that I was being positive about liking in that show.
Sorry.
Was how many people do an impression of Alan Tudyk in that, because they have to be him. He's inside of these different bodies and stuff.
People are doing Alan Tudyk impressions?
Yes.
Oh, I don't remember that.
There's
probably a YouTube compilation. Yeah, and like that in and of itself would have just been gold for me, but obviously like I had to justify my reasoning for Dollhouse to such a degree that I completely missed out on something that I absolutely love, which is people pretending to be evil Alan Tudyk. So my applaud.
Yes. Tell.
Excuse me, kitty. Thank you.
No, I will not be excused.
So my applaud is how big the world feels with like just little things like Sacred Hearts, Steve Larson. It doesn't feel as insular as it could. And so it feels just a lot bigger than it has to. And it's just these little like moments. And it also like gives, like, for how serious the character development is, there are these moments that kind of break up the seriousness with laughter. Like a guy with an untrained velociraptor on his shoulder gets shot by a Nazi devotee.
Not only is Cliff Steele, like, this famous race car driver, but he happened to be on the soap opera that is the obsession of Hero mm-hmm. 27 in our series.
Right. And that makes sense because he was an 80s race car driver and it doesn't feel out of place.
80s was full of cameos that didn't mm-hmm. make any bloody sense.
Right. Also, like, everybody on Danny's street when Flex does the wrong flex,
yeah.
you see, like, so many different O faces.
It would have been funny with the four of them.
But you see it, like, encapsulating everybody, and so it makes the world feel bigger than I think other shows make it, and it's just such a high point for me.
Yes.
Yeah,
that is a delicious applaud moment. You are absolutely right.
Nom 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 nom.
Wow.
Yeah.
End of May.
A two episode of the show we were watching part that's probably like, what do you say, 3-4 parts.
Well, yeah, it depends on how much we are able to trim up and try to get it to kind of balance out between each week and each, you know.
And they're all finding this out at the end.
Yeah. So you made it through May. It's the end of spring and we're going to be going into summer.
Oh, yeah. By the end of June, you'd say, right? Like mid-June, late June?
I always count summer as being June, July, and August, because that's like summer break.
Yeah, that's
and
fair.
September, October, November always feel so fallish.
Yeah.
And then you get like Thanksgiving at the end of fall, and then you get Christmas at the beginning of winter.
Yes.
And then February is always still cold. And then March and spring and May are, you know.
The weather doesn't line up, but your math does. And I like that. So, applauders. How'd you like that? Are you going to watch some Doom Patrol? Have you already watched all the Doom Patrol?
Maybe you've just binged it throughout the month of May in accordance with everything that we're talking about. And you're like, yeah, the Dada Patrol was great.
It was good.
I'm going to have to rewatch it.
You don't know enough about absurdist humor.
Yeah. I'm going to have to watch it with you. And then you're going to pause it and be like, this is what this means.
I won't. Okay. I'll just reference other... I don't know how I'll explain it. That's the whole point about Dadaism. Anyways.
Yeah.
But like, totally. I think this was a spectacular choice. Feel free to... Hey, if you get a chance to leave us a review, like our friend... Real Movies with a Z.
I don't think that's it.
It's something movies with a Z. One second.
Cool Movies with a Z. Awesome Movies.
Cool Movies
with a Z.
All right. If you like our friend Cool Movies with a Z, you know, want to leave us a review, we might read it on this part of our podcast or maybe even on Shock Talk, which is a review show.
The after show party you didn't know you didn't need.
Look, if you like us at all, you'll love Sean and Maddie. But we really appreciate you being here. We think you're fantastic. You keep living your true, most authentic self, because I think it took a long, hard road to get here.
All right. Until next time, this is Jen McQuaid.
I'm Naomi McQuaid.
And this is Lydia Malcolm.
And this is Shocked and Applaud. Thank you so much for listening.
Congratulations, Applauder. You've completed our second episode review of Doom Patrol on HBO Max. This also concludes our discussion of the show for this month, and we'll be back next month with something completely different. Madeline from Shock Talk has a pick for June, and it's one of her favorite 80s movies. Looking for more great podcasts to fill out your week? Film Rage just released their review of the new adaptation of Stephen King's Firestarter. And Critically Optimistic Movie Reviews is releasing their episode themed Time for Space today. Check out links to these episodes in this release's description. Hey, this is your audio engineer and the one who pulls on Superman's cape while messing around with Jim, Jen. Do you know what really helps us take flight? Becoming an official Applauder for only $1 per month on Patreon. You'll help us pay for our file hosting and also get private access to our unbleeped episodes. We'll be taking a short break and we'll return June 7th for a brand new episode. From Shocked and Applaud, thank you for patroning the peculiar.
Yay! Have you seen that video of the raccoon who grabs cotton candy and puts it in the water and then is just sad?
It's sadder than the Titanic. Not like the literal dying of people, but the movie. The movie, yeah. I'm more sad about that raccoon than I am about Titanic now.
Yeah.
I watched that movie 9 times.
Same here.
I cried every time.
Mm-hmm. How many times did you see it in the theater?
9 times. I've only seen it like twice out of the theater.
I saw it 8 times in the theater. Cried every time. Yeah.
I'm not proud. I talked a lot in the theater back then. And I 100%... when she's like, I'll never let go, Jack. My, like, how old was I? My 13 or 14 year old was like, what do you think you just did, you bitch? At the screen. I hate me for that. But it's on character.